Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships podcast. We have a wonderful guest this week who's an award-winning writer, actor and comedian from London. Her most recent Edinburgh show, which is beautifully displayed in the background of her Zoom, was in the top 25 best reviewed comedy shows of the Fringe, which is nice given that there was no Fringe Festival last year. You may also recognise her from roles in two of my favourite TV shows, Humans and Lovesick, which you can both find on Netflix UK, or, cheeky sponsor of ours, ExpressVPN, if you are not in the UK. So please welcome to the show the wonderful Jenny Beat.
Hello, thank you so much. What a lovely introduction.
I've started scripting them because I used to make notes and then just try and ad-lib it and it, no.
No, we have strengths, and sometimes once you know what yours are, it's so much more helpful, isn't it? I have to say, I really liked it because you did say that I could be seen in Humans. Now, I did get a job in Humans, and I spent a day training to be a robot-type person, and with costume fitting, and I filmed the whole thing, and I tweeted about it. I was like, guys, I'm going to be in Humans, and sorry, but I look quite fit, so you should watch it. And I watched the episode, and I'm like, my part was cut. So actually, no one can see me in it, but if I can tweet a picture of me in the dressing room to prove that I did do it and I did film it.
And you got paid, right? So that's the main thing.
Oh, I still got paid. I still got paid. And it technically shouldn't probably be on my CV in that respect, but it is. I've been cut from so many great things. The part's been cut before we even film. And unfortunately, you can't put that on a CV.
That's so
if I've been paid, it goes on the CV. It's really annoying. It's really annoying, especially because, like, because as a character actor, like, on the whole, I'm there for, like, little comic scenes. And while they're great and they punctuate the script with, like, little light moments, on the whole, you know, if writers have to do another draft, if they're talking about story and pushing that along, often the first things to go are these little scenes that, you know, they're not completely vital to the plot. Yeah, I get on the cutting room floor quite a lot, but... but still, thank you. Thank you for telling people I'm in Humans, because I just think if I keep spreading the rumour...
it might make it true. So. There might be enough exactly. Complaints that they put you back in. I mean, Netflix, they can change it.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Director's cut.
No, sorry, Jenny Beat. Yeah. Okay, yeah, well, I think we've started a movement there. What a good way to start. And then you've also got a story to share for us, and hopefully this one really did happen.
Oh, a dating story, yeah. So I've always been quite terrified of dates, right? So as a grown-up, absolutely fine. But when I was a teenager, I just found them the most cringy things in the world. Like, I started going out with boys when I was, like, 14, 15, whatever it was. And I remember I had a boyfriend at about 15 or 16. And it was, like, I suppose quite serious. But he was the boyfriend in that we'd all get together at someone's house and we'd go off and snog. Like, the idea of having to see him, just the two of us, terrified me. So every time he used to say, okay, let's go to the cinema, I'd go, okay, and I'd take four friends without telling him. And he used to get really wound up. But I was just like, I found the idea of being alone too cringy and too stressful. And then I remember he broke up with me once. We were on the phone and he was like, I was thinking we should go out for dinner. And I panicked so much, I just went, I'm not hungry. And he said, I didn't say for when. I'm like, yeah, I'm just generally not a hungry person. And he was like, okay. And then we broke up because he was like, I can't have a relationship with you and four of your friends. It's weird. Yeah, and also it was a lie. I mean, but just the idea of sitting there in like a forced silence, it used to like fill me with such anxiety. It was so weird. And there's always a bit of nerves around dating. I think as I got older, I got better at it. And I suppose the more I got involved with alcohol, the easier it all became.
Wow, fascinating to me. And I can definitely relate in that I have on more than one occasion said I'm not free before the person has suggested a time or day. And then I've had to do the whole like, oh, I'm just so busy chat, which actually I hate in other people when they're like, I'm just so busy, I'm so overwhelmed. It's like, it's your life. Take some responsibility.
Well, yeah. And the mad thing was with this guy, I think I was 15, I really liked him. I just found it all too much. So, like, it was this really conscious thing of knowing that I was doing all the wrong things. Who knows? I could be married to him now. Who knows? But no, it was this weird self-sabotage-y sort of, no thank you. But then I like to think maybe I was just too young. Maybe 15 is too young to be thinking about dating. And that is what I'm going to tell my daughter if I ever have one.
Well, I mean, it's obviously a lot of pressure when you're beginning and dating, whatever age that's at.
Yeah.
I think a big part of it, and I don't think there's a solution to this, but essentially, if you look at it this way, we are basically practicing relationships on each other. Generally, you know, people that are new to it are dating, you know, like yourself, other young people who are new to it, and we're risking heartbreak. I don't think there's a way around that, but we sort of just have to get good at relationships by failing at them loads, and
totally.
That is inherently yuck to me.
Yeah, I suppose that's exactly it. And the thing is, if you know that at the beginning, you know, your first broken heart, and everyone's like, oh, it's fine, you'll look back on this, and it's true, but it never feels like that at the beginning. It's all like, it seems all or nothing from the get-go, which is just so bonkers. I think that's quite a UK thing as well. Like, I know the Americans tend to have a much more relaxed approach to dating in terms of, you know, like, when I was younger as well, like, a boy would ask you out, and he'd be your boyfriend, and that'd be it. And it wouldn't mean anything necessarily, but like, you were like, oh, we're in a committed relationship despite the fact I don't know his middle name. Do you know what I mean? It was a lot too soon.
And then you start to feel like you're getting better at relationships, but also the older you get, the more the pressure is. So it doesn't necessarily get easier.
Yeah.
And so
totally.
Having watched a fair bit of your stand-up and loving it, I know that you had quite a, I would say, a long-term relationship, longer than any relationships I've had. And then you... took some time off afterwards. That was a massive one for you.
So yes, I was in a long-term relationship for, I think it was one of those things that every time I tell the story I feel like I'm gonna add a couple of years just to round it out. So I'll be like 15 years. It was about 6 or 7, I don't know. It was definitely more than 5. I think it was 6.
That is what I have in my notes.
Yeah,
yes.
And it was an interesting one. Yeah. Good to know that someone's fact-checked me. 6 years, yeah, which is a long time, and it's an interesting one. I don't know if you feel this, but as comedians and stuff, like, I feel like we mature a little slower. So even though it was, like, between, I think, 27 and 33, which are the years that a lot of people sort of start thinking about settling down, I feel like we've got a slightly arrested development in the creative world, where you're like, no, I'm just out every night. So, like, you don't think quite so seriously about it. Saying that, from the get-go, he said he was never a marriage person and he never wanted kids. And I was like, oh my God, me neither, which was a lie. But I was just like, that's fine. I can change his mind. He'll come round. And turns out it's actually quite a big decision people make and they don't go back on it for a reason. So it was an interesting one. I always sort of knew. And like, and I could say this, we're still very good friends. Like, we speak all the time. So nothing but love for each other, but I always knew it wasn't going to be the one, really. And I think I wanted to know that I was with someone that would want the same things as me one day. Because this is the thing for women, you know, we're on this stupid ticking time bomb where you guys can spunk them all out into your 70s or 80s or whatever. And so you want to be able to know that at least you're not wasting your time effectively, which is unfortunately when you get to the point of like, counting your fertile years, it does seem like that. We often talk about the fact that we probably should have broken up a couple of years earlier than we did.
Wow. And you know what you've got me thinking about? I think there's a long history of women settling for men and hoping that they can somehow improve by them being around.
Yeah.
And this is part of how like the emotional labour can so much end up on women. And I think there's also an element of, certainly for me, I partly blame Disney, this kind of idea that, like, with the right princess, he can become the prince he was always destined to be.
Yes, exactly.
And it's like, that's a lot of pressure to put on a woman who is often doing a menial job for her evil sisters. Like, yeah, it's intense. And so do you feel like the ticking time clock, as you call it, do you think that's part of the, like, them pressure to compromise of, like, quick, I need to, like, what man can I grab that has sperm?
Totally. Like, we're at this annoying point where biology is not caught up with technology, and even though we're living longer, we can still only reproduce, we can only reproduce decent ones as well for like a certain amount of time.
What's a line?
Sorry, I don't know.
Sorry to people out there with undecent children.
No, do you know what? They just say the quality of your eggs get worse, and I don't like to think about what that necessarily means for the offspring. But it's just this weird thing of, yeah, it's constantly your mind. And you know, you're sort of bombarded by it, especially if you're like someone who's got a lot of friends with babies.
No,
you start.
It.
Really?
Yeah.
You seem fine.
Am I well adjusted?
You seem great, Bobby.
I also host a mental health podcast. Anyway, moving on. You were saying.
No, and the fact that you do run a mental health protocol, I find the sexiest thing. This is my thing after when I started dating again after my big breakup. The most attractive thing in a person, in a grown-up, is them knowing themselves and them having dealt with, and this isn't, I'm not saying this as like a my ex didn't, but it's just something that you learn as you get older, I think. Men or women or whoever it is you date, if they're still in their like 30s and they haven't sorted their shit out, like late 30s, let's say, and they haven't sorted their shit out and they're still like blaming their parents for things, I feel like it's the least attractive thing. And someone that knows themselves, that knows their flaws and has done a bit of work on themselves already, oh, I like that. Because I don't know, I feel like as women, all women I know are in therapy and have done loads of work on themselves in terms of like, yeah, relationships, not just, you know, romantic ones, but all kinds, and your sort of self-love and self-care and body image and all these different things. And when you meet like a man in their 40s that's still like, oh, I think it's because my mum didn't love me enough, you're like, oh my God, grow up, Steve.
Well, it's like, now you spent more time away from your mum than with her, so like, when are you going to take responsibility? Because like, I get that obviously parents exactly. have a huge impact, but it's interesting when we get into talking about gender, because like, to me, sex is real and gender is for the most part made up and socialized into us. And part of that is, I think you're absolutely right, along self-development lines. I was reading Catelyn Moran's book recently, and she was saying that you can ask a woman like her opinions on cushions and she'll have a whole manifesto. She'll have a whole manifesto on why each of her friends are single. And for a lot of guys, we just aren't encouraged to think about that stuff as much and read those books. We're more encouraged of like, you're going to be a failure if you don't have the career, not if you don't have the career and the perfect home.
Yeah, and for God's sake, change that tire kind of thing. Like, yeah, we're totally taught different things. This is why it annoys me when people think that, like, feminists and stuff, you know, it's just for women. It's for everyone. Like, learned gender roles are so toxic in every way, and it all feeds into each other. And, yeah, I am definitely more drawn to... So I'm heterosexual, I'd say almost exclusively, but, you know, like, so I'm definitely...
That's a very fancy way of putting it, almost exclusively.
Feel like, you know, people talk about being on sliding scale, and actually I do believe in that, but I've had a very I've had a very boring I didn't go to uni, I didn't experiment, I've only ever been with men, basically. That's what my experience is. But I'm definitely drawn to the ones that are more in touch, you know, with their feelings, and that haven't been raised in a way that's like, you're weak if you don't do this. Like, my dad's an incredibly sensitive man. Like, he's got two, it's me and my sister, so it's always three women and him in the house. And he's so quick to cry all the time, and he never hid it. He was never ashamed of it. He never played football. Like, he was just, you know, in a lot of ways, sort of stereotypically not that manly, you know, is how people described him, I suppose, years back. It's been the best thing to see that and to grow up around that, I think. I realise what I've just said is like, I just want a man like my dad.
I mean, you know what? I'd rather you own it, right? Like, I do sometimes hear people really explain hard to me how they're not attracted to people like their parents. And the more they explain it, the less I believe them.
Totally.
So, yeah. So I get that. I mean, so my version of that, I've realised recently, is I am very influenced by past relationships in terms of who I date in the future. And that's a habit I'm trying to get out of, because there's one person I was with for a long time, and I've realized that some of the people I'm dating are kind of like them, and that was not a good enough relationship to justify them being a template. But I think this can happen when you're in it long enough, then it's like, okay, this is what love is, right?
Oh, how long were you in it?
I mean,
don't have to talk about this if you don't want
no, we can. It's just a whole story. So 8 years if we rounded up, but we're talking a lot of like in and out of it. So that's why like my longest proper relationship is 2 years. This one was like vague and confusing for the duration.
How old are you, if you don't mind me asking? Because you look 15, so I'm trying to work out an eight-year relationship.
Yeah, so I was dating when I was 7. Is that correct, Matt? No. I actually don't tell people, but people just tend to assume I'm whatever age suits them. So maybe you like me as a 15-year-old. Thank you.
Age ain't nothing but number, and I say that in a non-R. Kelly way. Despite him having written that song.
As an actor looking for work, he's like, I can play any age. 79, why not? I'll draw some lines on me with mascara.
I've only recently started being out about my age, actually. And that's another thing, I think, that, you know, on the whole, certainly in Hollywood, it's women that aren't allowed to age on the whole, I think. You know, like, in that you'll get, like, the George Clooney and the Will Smiths and the men staying the same age, and then just the women they date in these films just getting younger and younger and younger. But the men can be the same age. But I get it. No, everyone's very judgy about these things. And I've only just started telling the truth. And to be honest, I might stop because I haven't had any work for a while.
I mean, I do wonder about that. I'm like, I think we can scrap 2020. I don't know if that birthday counts. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Maybe we just get creative with it. You just take it off. You're like, so, you know, you had a big breakup. You took a bit of time for yourself. And you're like, yeah. I don't think those months count, actually. Like,
yeah. Take off all the hours that I've slept because I don't think that counts. So that's got to be like, what, 15 years?
Yeah, so I guess you're 15 too. We're both there. Yeah. We're both in relationships illegally. Good fun.
Oh, gosh. Sorry. I made it dark. I didn't mean to.
And so am I right in thinking you are in a relationship now, right?
I am, yeah. I've been with him for 3.5 years, I think.
Very nice. And so do you feel like this is a good one? Do you feel like you've broken maybe any patterns you might have had from other men?
Ooh. Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. So actually, our first date was interesting. So I was back in 2017 when I was writing the show about wanting a baby and the breakup and everything. I did a bunch of Bumble dates for, like, you know, amusing stories for stand-up.
Love using humans as pawns.
Always. And I'd had... That's okay, right? And I was stuck on the ending. I was like, oh, I'm just going to go on a few more dates and I can't really be bothered. And I desperately wanted to do Edinburgh Single. So I was like, oh my God, I'm going to sleep with everyone and have the best time and catch stuff. And so I went on a couple of dates in May. And actually, there was this one guy.
I think I want to give you a point for that. I love the ambition and also the realism. I'm going to sleep with everyone and I've not committed to it properly unless I get an STD.
Thank you very much. I love that I'm getting points for all the worst bits of me. But yeah, I just thought, you know, because I've never had a single Edinburgh and everyone was like, oh, you got to do it at some point. And there were some people on my list. Yeah, so I went on a few dates in May, but there's this one guy that I was chatting to that was like, oh God, this guy's the best chat ever. Like, he was very physically attractive, really sexy in photos, really smart, really funny, incredibly, like, feminist and, like, politically all the same sort of things. We were on the same page and I was super smart and I was just like, oh my God, this is gonna be electric. So I had a date with him planned for the Thursday and a date with someone else planned on the Saturday, who also seemed fine. And so I was really excited about this first date and I was like, oh God, it's gonna be great. Anyway, obviously get there was just couldn't have been less chemistry. Like, all this amazing stuff online, like, you know, this is the thing that you miss, I think, with online dating. It's sometimes it's a gesture, it's the way someone looks, it's the way someone turns their head that you can find attractive, and it just doesn't translate to, like, witty texts and stuff. So I was like furious. Not furious, I was just like disappointed, to the point where when it got to the Saturday and I was going on this next date and I'd just done a preview of my show and I was a bit like cocky, I suppose, and I got there and I was like, listen, can I be honest? I had a really bad date on Thursday that went on for too long. Can we just have one drink and then see how we feel from there? Let's just call it if we're not feeling it after one drink. And he's like, yeah, cool.
That feels very mature, but I think that could be quite intimidating if the other person is nervous.
Yeah, I suppose so. But actually, I suppose I liked the fact that he was intimidated.
So maybe that's a good test, like, actually. Ooh.
Yeah. 15 minutes in, I was like, so I get another drink then? And we've been together ever since.
Wow. So there we go. All we need is for you to buy more than one drink and we can all be with Jenny Beat.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if the first drinks are very strong Negroni, then you don't know what's happening after that. It was such an instant thing. And like after that first night, it's like, oh, I think this is going to turn into something. It's just been relatively easy the whole time. We moved in after about a year and a half, maybe, and we've got a dog and it's all just really nice. So I've always gone for people, I suppose, like a little bit like me, like performers, comedians, trash bag attention seekers, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I'm joking. No, but, you know, people that are like, that light up a room or that, you know, that are sort of like, you know, you feel their presence. And it's always been a bit of a battle of egos. And this is the first time that he's a producer. So it's great because we work in the same industry, but he is just far more practical and logical and very happy to be like, you do your thing, mate. I'm not going to try. You know, it just seems like a really good fit. And I suppose 10 years ago or so, I might have gone like, no, I want him to be able to get up in front of a crowd and make people swoon. I don't know why I'd want that, but
I mean, do you think that was partly an ego thing? That was related to you building your like confidence within your craft, and then you were like, oh, I also want someone hot on the red carpet with me, and that is more important than...
No, there's a definite sort of feeling associated. So one
it's
thing
like
that
a
I
branding
talk about...
thing almost, because I was when I was younger, I was very into that of like how this person reflects on me, and now I'm like, I just want someone nice. Like
my
requirements have got so much less complicated.
Yeah, that comes with age, I think, definitely. Interestingly, and I don't think he'll mind me saying this, I was just starting out as a comic when I met him, and he was doing much better than me. You know, he was further along, and I absolutely adored him and loved his act so much. I ended up getting to a point where I was like quite happy to like, it's scary gigging, I'm not going to, but I'll go watch him. Like, and so in the end you can go, oh, I can have the life where I don't have to put myself out there, but I still get to see all the same things and go to the same places. And so in a way, I think I put my career on hold a bit because I was more invested in his.
And I can really see that, actually. People do tend to couple up with colleagues. And I wonder if you've hit on part of the reason why, that you're like, okay, I admire their career and I want an element of their life and what they've got. Because I've definitely been the other side of that, where I've got into relationships with people and I'm like, oh, I think you want my lifestyle, and then you sort of uncomfortable when it's like my achievements are me working all the time. You know, it's like that's not what you imagined. You imagined like all the sort of swanning around. That's fascinating. Another point for Jenny.
Oh, thank you. Do you know, I wish I'd seen it at the time. I really do. I think it's something that I only saw in hindsight because, this sounds really, I've been very honest. I'm a massive oversharer as well, so this is a terrible, terrible mixture. There's, you know, that thing where you have little moments, pockets in your career or whatever, where you're like, you're nearly at a point where something exciting could happen. And I think I shy away from a couple of them during that time, probably because I was scared, probably because I didn't feel ready. But I think I definitely used his career as a way of doing that. So that's something that when I came out of that relationship, was like, right, well, that can never happen again. That's the other thing about being a bit older when you date as well. Like, both my boyfriend and I were very established in what we do. And, like, we complimented each other, but we didn't need each other. We didn't, you know, there was no power struggle, which I think is what happens so much at the time when neither of you really know who you are or what you want.
Well, that's what sounds really key about it, that there was that element of codependency, that then you come out of the relationship, and because you'd intertwined your idea of career and success so much with his, then it's like, where are you left after that? And you know, you've got me thinking about what I would describe as a conspiracy, but you know the way people talk about, like, you find someone when you're not looking. It's like you take your eye off the ball and then suddenly someone appears, and I'm like, that sounds like such bullshit, and yet it keeps happening. And I wonder if what you've had is like a more realistic version of that I can believe, because you went from this thing where, like, you were very wrapped up in someone else's life and success, and I would say codependent elements were there, to then you happen to meet somebody on a particular day when you were like, you know what, fuck it. If this is a good date, it is. If it's not, it's not. And actually, maybe that can come across as a kind of, like, confidence and independence that is actually aspirational, as opposed to, this person's really cool, let me fold into their life.
Confidence is the most attractive thing, I realise, as well as, like, as I get older. Like, I feel like with sex appeal, like, confidence is such a huge thing. It is, it's that thing where you're sort of, when you're not looking, it happens. I know that sounds, it is quite cliche, but
It's when you take the pressure off a bit, because you were feeling under all this pressure before.
That's what it is.
Yeah, and then suddenly I wasn't. But, tragically, I never got my Slaggy Edinburgh.
I mean, well, yeah, truly, truly ruined it for you, so. I mean, maybe when one day in 2025, when we have Edinburgh Fringe again, you get a free pass. Is that what we're going to pitch?
Yeah, why not? Why not? You're absolutely mad.
Do it. It's his fault, isn't it? So, coming in here, being so damn compatible with you.
I know. And then I had to finish writing my show all about being single, where actually I'd met someone that I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be with this guy. So I had to sort of do this. I just sort of derailed it. I made it about something else in the end. But it was really funny because I'm doing, like, part of my persona during that show was being like this desperate woman trying to just find anyone to have a baby with. So I'd get loads of emails off, or not loads, who do I think I am? I'd get the occasional email or something afterwards going, I think you'd get on with my friend. He was in the audience and he thought you were really sweet. And he's definitely looking to settle down and have a baby. And then you'd have to be like, oh no, sorry, I lied to you.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's very intense. I'm trying to think, is it better or worse if a friend recommends somebody? I think maybe worse.
Have you ever been set up by a friend? Like, I think you're going to like this person and see what happens.
No, I tell you the nearest thing I get to that is people, what's an accurate way of describing it? I think people subject their friends to me, is how I'm going to phrase it. So I get a lot of like, oh, this person's, we can't work them out. Here you go, figure them out. Or, you know, we think this person might be gay. And I'm like, I'm not, why am I the authority on sexuality? I don't even have a set sexuality label. What is going on? Or, you know, people love the idea of like, my friend is struggling with their mental health. What do you think they've got? Jeez. There are doctors, there are services out there.
Yeah, that seems like the worst place to try and start a sexy relationship.
I guess, no, this isn't a relationship dynamic. This is just...
Oh, I see what you mean.
I think people are so used to me being single that maybe setting me up with people is kind of off their radar. So I get the like, I'm confused by this person. Figure it out.
Wow.
Analyze.
I mean, in a way, is it quite nice to be like someone that people trust to help? Or is it just like, I've got my own shit. I don't need this.
I'm happy to analyze the people I actually like. And it means one of the interesting parts of that is people really love getting relationship advice from me. And I feel woefully inadequate to give it, but it turns out I am good at giving it. I'm not good at making as good decisions myself.
You're good at giving it, not as good as at living it.
Yeah, there we go. Put that on the poster.
Thank you. All of yours. That's really interesting. Yeah, I've never been on a setup sort of thing. I suppose, yeah, occasionally you get like a... Hi, I've got a friend that's looking to start stand-up and she doesn't know who to speak to. Like, you know, you get those sorts of things. But when I think it comes from a relationship point of view, where it's like, hey, I think you guys might want to bang each other. I just think that's such an awkward start.
It is. I think it's a lot of pressure in the wrong ways. I'm like, I think I'm gonna set a rule on this. So we do rules of the game at the end. So sure. I'm going to jump forward and say that my rule of the game might be, if you want to set up a friend, set them up with somebody as a friend. Like, don't put that pressure on. Maybe introduce them in a group setting. See if they get on.
Yes.
Also, you can still intervene. You can still, you know, you'll probably hear from one or other if they're interested, right? And then you can say, okay, ask them out, go on a date. They're also interested. I think maybe that's the new way we could do it. And I would be very open to people setting me up in that way.
Yeah, I think that's a nice way of doing it. Whereas I remember, like, episodes of, say, Friends, where someone's like, I've got a guy you should meet, and they didn't know what they were doing, and they turn up at a dinner table and just say yes to a single man. It's like, oh, that's get to know someone first.
Yeah.
I babble, sorry.
I've gone so into the thoughts that I've now forgotten what I'm saying as well. So should we fast forward then, as I've already done, to the rules of the game? So I've given what I think could be a rule of the game. For you, what do you think something people could live by in relationships?
Oh.
No pressure.
Well, no, I feel like I should try and make a funny one, but honestly, my genuine thing is to know what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Know what you want, know what you don't want. It's so funny because I think there's this online kind of fourth wave feminism kind of like, know your worth and love yourself and all this and don't put up for anything else. And I think I'm like, yeah,
and
great.
And it is shouting the way it's often written.
It is. Oh, it's always capital letters and exclamation marks. And in theory, it's a great idea. But also, I think sometimes it does alleviate people from any responsibility. And sometimes we are just cunts.
I think for me, I've been thinking recently how knowing what you want going in can be such a help of deciding whether or not to stay. Because I've got a long history of getting into quite vague and confusing situations, which can seem intriguing, and I'm somewhat attracted by the figuring it out. But then I get into it and I'm like, is this what I wanted? I'm like, maybe now I've like got into a relationship and I feel I understand you better. And now I'm sort of, do I want to be here? And maybe if we know what we want quite clearly going into it, if we've like done that work on ourselves, then we can go in and actually have something to assess it by. Because I think without that, it's just, I want to be in a relationship with this person. And then you get there and then you're like, I guess now we have to work towards marriage or kids or moving in together to check that this works? Do you know what I mean? I'm like, what else are you measuring it against?
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, sometimes we'll stay because we'll just go, oh, it's fine. I think sometimes there's a fear of just rocking the boat. And I think interrogating yourself to find out if you are really happy. I read a really interesting thing on, I can't remember who it was, and I feel bad now saying this without talking about who it was. Someone I follow on Instagram talking about how they were engaged, oh no, they were married to this really great guy who everyone was always like, oh, you're so lucky. And she was like, yeah, but he just didn't ever feel right for her. And she eventually divorced him and feels so much better. But she said that she was constantly sort of felt guilty for, like, I am being ungrateful.
Well, I guess it helps with that as well, right? That if you've got all these external voices, that can really complicate things, you know, and it happens. Yeah. Like, I've definitely been that friend where I'm like, but you said you wanted someone really like this, and now you've got someone like this. Like, what's your concern? You know, I don't really get why you're not happy with it. And I'm trying to understand, but it's like, if they don't know what they're looking for, like, then neither of us will be able to figure it out.
Exactly. And I think, sorry, can I add another rule?
Oh, yeah, sure. Two rules, let's do. Never had that before.
I just suddenly realised, if I could go back in my early 20s, and I'm not condoning cheating, I am not condoning, you know, abusing someone's trust in any way. If I could do it again, I think I would have liked the idea of being less tied to people early on. I think we get with someone and we think we owe them everything straight away. And I think just sometimes keeping things a bit more options open, which generationally is sort of maybe happening a bit more these days with youngsters, I don't know. But just at some point, you probably will spend years and years being loyal to someone. So play the field.
Yeah, no, I love that.
I would say to my younger self.
I think that's good. You get a point for that. Play the field. Quickly, before you meet someone like your partner and then you're trapped in a loving relationship and it's so awful for you and nobody in the room is jealous. But no, I think that's true. And I do wonder, this is maybe a whole other conversation, but I do wonder if there are people in your life, you know, this kind of idea of the one. I don't believe in that. I think there are certain people that you do have a really good spark with organically, and it's unexplainable. But they could be a friend. They could be a relationship.
Totally.
Or maybe they could be a relationship for a period of time.
Yeah. Sometimes people are there for a reason as opposed to, like, for life. You know,
that's okay too. Sometimes they're there for a reason or a season.
Yeah, well, that's definitely, I think some of my therapists used to say, like they could be there for a reason, a season, or a lifetime, or something like that. But, like, I think as well, it's good to not be, so I had a heartbreak when I was 24 that nearly killed me. I was so in love, it was disgusting. And it broke me, and it took me years and years and years. And I think once you have something like that, you'll always be a little bit okay afterwards. As in love as I am, I'm also in a very, like, real relationship where we have our issues, we work through stuff. I don't want to break up with him, but knowing that you'd be okay by yourself, I think is a really good way to go into a relationship.
Oh, for sure. And also
that makes sense.
Surely we want from the other side. You know, I don't want to ever be with someone who's only with me because they're scared of being single. That's not fun.
Oh, absolutely.
Or someone that's, like, so dependent on you that they'd be like, I can't live without you. That's not attractive. I do think that my version of love it's much less romantic now than I'd have thought it was as a teenager. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, I think people get tied into relationships because of the passion and the tension and the, oh, will they, won't they? And like, this drama becomes addictive. And actually, the least drama possible is probably when you'll be the happiest.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I think you're right. When we're young, we can really confuse passion for love. And we're like, this thing is really intense and I have all these strong feelings. And a lot of them could be really, you know, heartache and bad feelings. And this person causes me anxiety. But the intensity of it is like, oh, this must be what love is. And then you actually...
Yeah, and like you were saying earlier,
we're learning this. So that intensity of feeling when we don't have anything to compare it to, it's like, oh, this must be love. And actually, it's only later that you go, no, that was a whole bunch of feelings that made me feel really unsafe and really scared and sick most of the time. And it's only afterwards that you go, oh yeah, that was just, it was just really, it was just a lot, it wasn't the right thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the older I get, the more I think that, you know, love is something like you say, it's more realistic. It can be functional. You know, it can be hot that they fit in your life well. You know, it doesn't have to be that you've overcome the odds and it's some kind of fairy tale and, you know, you're Romeo and Juliet and both of you were 13 when that was written. These things are not realistic that we've been sold. And so maybe it is something where it's like, no, we make a lot of sense for each other. And love is something that can grow and evolve and intensify with time, as opposed to I'm obsessed with this person, I'm besotted on sight.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think that lasts.
No, I don't think it does. Every time I see someone like gush about their partner on Instagram or something and they're like, we're obsessed with each other, we love it. It's like, that's not it. Maybe it is, but on the whole, you know it's not. Like, because you'll see them after and you'll be like, oh, no, you just had a massive fight and it felt safer to put something out there. Pretending it's all okay. I don't know. God, I sound very judgy. I don't mean to. Do your thing.
No, I like it. I agree with much of this, so it's all good. We'll wrap up there then. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been
absolute
wonderful.
Pleasure. It's been really fun.
I've enjoyed hearing your insights.
I appreciate that. So, yeah, thank you. And in a moment, we'll record the little Patreon bit for the people that pay. If people want to find you online, where should they go?
Oh, yeah. No problem.
Yeah, I'm not very active on social media at the moment, but if you like Fluffy B. Chanfrises, then follow me on Instagram at Jenny Bead, or on Twitter, I'll occasionally have a rant about something or tweet something that I think's funny, or very often just retweet a dog again. It's all very dog-based. No, I should sell myself better than that. Just follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jenny Bead.
That feels very you being like, my social media, it's there, make up your own mind, maybe it's funny, I tweet things out, the world tells me whether they're funny or shit. I think that's very honest.
sure.
All right, let's end there. Thank you. Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.